Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! It's over! It's over! Cleveland is a city of champions once again.
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm,
and he got it. Young Ball continues to wear him out.
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network, brought to you by our friends at betonline.ag. I am your host, Justin Rowan, making my grand return with my co-host today, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
As one host and leader returns from an extended vacation, another leaves.
You know, I went through a five-hour flight today. I'm tired. I got a bit of a headache. I just put down some food. But you know what? Some of us don't bail when things get tough. Whew. And my goodness, John Boeheim is just not one of those people.
Well, in fairness, that you have such a stamina advantage.
I truly do. I've got a lot of life still left in me. I want to give a big shout out, though, to Jeff Nomina for filling in the podcast. One that I will never listen to, and a second one that was a whole lot of fun. So I appreciate him filling in. I'm sure the depressing one was well done, even though it was terrible.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I said I wanted to be the Magic.
So let me get this straight. You said you wanted to be the Magic about a week removed from you comparing Darius Garland to DJ Augustine. What do you have going on with Orlando?
Just, you know, aspirational. That's all.
God, that's depressing.
I know. But we
do need to jump into the depressing news. Actually, I don't even know if it's depressing.
I'm not depressed.
Yeah.
Let me be clear. It's embarrassing for the Cavs.
Let's get to our pants down moment of the week. Because this is...
Everyone wants to sponsor that one.
Yes. Hey, untuck it if you want to get into with the pants down moment of the week. We're all about that. We can do a little branded segment there. But the funny thing is, this can't be a huge surprise to any. Well, I guess it is surprising. I'm still working my way through this whole situation, but this is something that you and I have talked about, where it's like, hey, he's really not being shy about making public comments that make it seem like he might actually be capable of stepping down. And I think it's important to clarify on the front end here with John Boeheim stepping down from the Cavs, which will either happen this week or at the end of the season, but his tenure...
Can we do a thing here? Can we just set the tone? Because I think it's going to be really annoying if we have to like hedge the whole time. Can we just assume he's stepping down this week? And we're wrong, then whatever. Can every listener just agree that that's fine?
Yes, I think that's a good way to set it up.
I think that's a good way to actually discuss why that's got to be the case. And if it's not, uh-oh.
Right. The implication is that it's going to happen this week. And Chris Fedor did mention that it is becoming increasingly likely that it happens this week. I honestly think, so this is something that there were kind of rumblings out there for a few days prior. And with this going national, and you could tell the Cavs weren't really anticipating this breaking and going national, because none of the beat guys really had a prepared statement on it. It just did not help them in any way, shape, or form. But when you have a locker room that Boeheim has lost, basically, that doesn't have a whole lot of confidence in him, for that locker room to now know that he doesn't even think that he can do the job and is stepping down and presumably leaving money on the table, there is no way in hell you can go back to that situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it hadn't gone public, it feels like very likely like someone like a Beilein would say to himself, hey, you know, I'm going to at least see this year through. I owe myself that much. But now it's like the team will just not even show up for him. And boy, were they already not showing up for him.
Here's the thing that annoys me. So I was very prepared, even with, and I'm going to play the hits here, even with a tough part of the schedule coming up, Carter. I was prepared for this end of the season to be a little bit of fun. You got Andre Drummond in, really enjoyed that game against Atlanta. Caught up on that while I was on my break. And for the Cavs to not even go like a week since that game, and to have this come up, it's just so frustrating. And I anticipate that Kobe Altman did not want it to happen at this time, that if Beilein was going to step down, it would be at the end of the season. But no, there's no way he can stick around. And I'm sure we're going to get more and more information on kind of the factors that have gone into this. But the warning signs have been there pretty much since day one with John Beilein.
Yeah, I think we should talk about them. So warning sign number one, Dylan Windler gets a stress fracture due to two-a-days and excessively hard practices during summer league. This dude was running these guys ragged, learning his system for a six-day event. warning sign number two, pivoting. All right, moving on. No, warning sign number two, he focused on the fundamentals. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen an American film classic, Angels in the Outfield, but George Knox, in a tirade against his team early in the film, says that they're going to come in early and practice fundamentals. And, of course, you realize that's funny because that's not what coaches do in the professional leagues. But that was news to John Beilein. They practiced pivoting. And its ilk, and then at the end of camp, Beilein bemoaned that he didn't have time to install a system.
Here's the funny thing: if he had NBA experience, maybe he would recognize that at the start of every single season, refs are going to call travels on everything to make it feel like they're have a new emphasis on how they're calling games and whatnot. And that always goes away. So the fact that they were calling the travels in preseason, yeah, it happens, but guys have always been able to get away with that stuff. And you know that the refs are going to start letting that go again in 3 weeks. But he saw that as, oh my God, this has to be our number one priority because of all these damn turnovers. And the
warning sign number nine.
Yes. Do you want to keep going?
Or I got more.
All right,
I got
keep
more
going
for you, baby. On the record, complained about players being injured and unavailable to practice. Number 10, complained about not enough practice time. Number 11, named his cuts polar bears. But like, there was just so many things that should have told us this was not going to go well. And like, you just were hoping there was just enough buy-in or maybe some goodwill. And it just burned down. And then it felt like Sluggate just like was the straw that broke the camel's back, you know?
Right. And if the team wanted to fire him, they would have had an out there. And I think it's important to make a couple clarifications here on the front end. This decision, everything we've heard, both publicly, privately, everywhere, this is 100% Beilein's decision. The Cavs do not want him stepping down here. Although at this point, I don't see any way that...
I would imagine... At this point, they would rather just be done.
Yeah, I agree. Number two. So with that in mind, there's a few things. So Beilein was considered to be a good candidate for making a jump or somebody that a lot of people, and it's funny because I actually feel like NBA Twitter liked the hire more than Cavs fans even did initially. And for that reason... Pardon me. As somebody that doesn't really know how to evaluate coaches, and I think you learn a little bit more as you go through the course of a season, but especially at that time, and I don't watch tons of college basketball. I was like, okay, well, if everyone thinks that he's somebody that can make that leap and be a Billy Donovan or a Brad Stevens or any of those other guys that have made a jump recently, okay, that makes some sense. There was no indicator that by preseason game four, he's going to openly be freaking out over not being able to manage practices properly, that he doesn't have enough time to put his systems in. There's no way you can anticipate the whole slugs thing. There's no way you can anticipate a coach quitting in year one of five. And I don't think that that's something you can put on the Cavs, because they put a very good assistant coaching staff around him. They made a lot of smart hires there as well. And this has unfolded in a way that I don't think anyone could see coming. On the other hand, sorry, Carter, I just want to get through this.
Keep running.
On the other hand, the immediate messaging that we've heard now is that the plan was always for, at some point, for J.B. Bickerstaff to take over from Beilein, and the Cavs did not anticipate that change happening so soon. When you hire a guy and you have a succession plan in place already, that creates a terrible atmosphere. And this is the exact same thing we saw last time around, where Dan Gilbert hires his guy and David Blatt, and David Griffin's hire, his preferred hire, was Ty Lue. The compromise was for him to be the assistant coach. We're seeing the exact same thing now, where the Kobe Altman hire would be Bickerstaff, and Dan's choice was Beilein. And
can I throw a little salt on this fire?
Yes.
I don't think that was the plan. I think any messaging like this has come out very recently, so it looks like they are not completely up shit creek.
You know what? That's possible. That would give me a little bit more comfort, because
honestly, I think that's their version of damage control in a raging forest fire of a situation.
That it's very possible, and you know what? That's pivoting that Beilein would be proud of.
I just feel like I do think on one end, it's like it's fun and fair to excoriate Beilein for not being able to adapt even a little bit, but like I do want to note that it's not like this has never happened before, like as far as I can tell, in the NBA or any sport. So at least a little bit of it has to go on the Cavs.
No, 100%. Some should go on the Cavs, but I do want to clarify, and I think it's really important to make the distinction, because I think you and I, among the wide spectrum of Cavs fans, I think you and I are probably on the more critical side of Dan Gilbert. And I think it's important to draw a distinction from when it's him intervening and firing a coach. Because a lot of the conversation I've seen today is people saying, oh, the Cavs firing another coach. No. The process in hiring him and having a possible successor, if that is in fact the case, that you can put on Dan. But things going this way, like this is what they should expect from the season. This is what Beilein was signing up for. And the fact that the way that he conducts practices is, we are going to run the same thing over and over again until it's done perfect. That is great. That works well in Coach Carter. That probably worked well at Michigan. But when you have a set number of hours that you're allowed to eat, to practice, and you only get two practices a month, if that, wasting all that time and working on pivoting or whatever the case may be, and not being able to get through all the things you wanted to discuss and work on in practice, that's going to leave you underprepared, and that's on the coach just from a basic time management perspective.
I just think that ultimately, if you are the Cavs and you are doing your internal postmortem for this season, you're doing your exit interviews and really reviewing every decision you made, don't hire a fucking octogenarian. They're not famously adaptable, Justin. They're so old. They've been living one way for forever. It's not their fault.
Beilein's out here mad at millennials when he's the one quitting like one.
No. I'm just saying that I don't care what you say. I get it. I get that he should have been better and he should have been more flexible. And maybe he should have named his flex cut a flex cut. But with that said, how do you not know that this is at least a possibility? With a disgruntled veteran core, that knew better days. And then you dump this guy who is going to, like anyone in their 70s, have a hard time adjusting to a completely different paradigm than their entire career. It's not like he's young and impressionable.
No, that he is not.
I'll tell you what. Was it worth? Do you think even if they have to agree to a friendly like 2 to 2.5 year buyout with Beilein, do you think it saved them money in the aggregate on the ageism lawsuit? I sure hope so.
I think that's our best case scenario is hoping that that's the case. And ultimately, I mean, this does save the money, and I think it's important to note. And I saw you make this point before. This is probably for the best.
Of course
it
is.
But my God, is it embarrassing.
It's just truly, I'm not mad. I really am not. Because I'd rather Bickerstaff be the coach the rest of the year. I really would. Because it's an NBA coach who wants to do NBA coach stuff and isn't so worn down that they considered quitting their career. And I think you are the one who made this point. I don't think I've seen you tweet it yet. So I'm going to credit you in the moment right here that the Cavs have made two consecutive coaches lose their love of basketball and coaching.
Yep. They gave up on the profession. Two 60-plus-year-old head coaches have given up on the profession as a result of coaching the Cavs.
Yeah. It's tough, man. I tweeted this earlier. It's just the fact that, you know, this will be six coaches in 7 years in a stretch where the team made four straight finals, won a championship. And it's just whether things are good or bad, Justin, I remember, you know, we were talking, I've teased you about this a lot about, you know, being ready for the LeBron circus to move on because it's just too exhausting. And I think what.
Yeah, I was ready for the drama to be over, Carter.
Yeah, what you failed to account for is the circus is never leaving town. Like the drama and instability is baked into the DNA of this franchise, feast or famine. In the good times, they're going to be dramatic. In the bad times, they're going to be dramatic. It's just, there's too much instability. It's like a volatile chemical concoction that it just, I don't know what a boring, like 4.5 to 5 out of 10 kind of Cavs team is.
I mean, it's a great question. And it's probably sad for some people that that's what we're hoping for and that's what we'd like to see. But you know what? I still don't feel like we are further away from getting to that point than we were before this situation. I don't think this actually impacts the trajectory because the Cavs are operating from rock bottom and they are in, as I like to say, year one of the rebuild. Bickerstaff, it's going to be interesting, and I'm sure we'll get into this in a little more detail later. At the very least, I don't think he's a good head coach. He might be. Coaches do have good and bad seasons, and we don't really know what we're talking about. That Memphis team was absolute dog shit. But
yeah, he's got a real core worth worth believing in here.
All that being said, I do think at the very least he is an NBA coach, and the players seem to connect him. And hey, if your plan was actually to have a successor at some point in the next 4 or 5 years, someone that can be a just baseline NBA head coach and maybe get things a little more normal. When he's frustrated with the team, he doesn't immediately go to post game pressers and talk about how he doesn't have answers. Like that's the thing. I've seen some people criticize the Cavs and say, well, you know, they're always putting out how he is struggling to adapt and make changes. There is no way to cover that up when that's what he's talking about after games. He is going directly to the media on live TV most of the time talking about, I don't have answers. This is the toughest thing I've gone through. And I'm sure there's factors outside of the Cavs. I know Shams mentioned that his son stepped down before even coaching a game in college, and that's been a situation that's really been weighing on his family, and we don't know any of the details there. But the way that he has handled this, you would expect from someone his age that a little bit more professionalism, especially when he has, as he likes to point out, spent his entire career as a head coach. He's never been an assistant.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if professionalism is the right word there. I think he's being honest. I think it's like he just doesn't.
I don't want people to be honest with me. I want noble lies.
He was just completely lost. And, you know, I think that the Cavs.
He's fallen and he couldn't get back up.
I just think, yeah, he didn't have the stamina to deal with this. Like, I made the joke earlier, but, like, getting your teeth kicked in every night is no easy task. I mean, and to your point, it's fair to it. We did shit on Kevin Love for not handling it well either. He just handled it more aggressively as opposed to kind of hands up in the air. But he just lost the locker room, never really installed his offense, never really played the way that he wanted to play. And it just didn't work. Nothing of this worked. And I don't know, man. I just don't.
I mean, it wasn't working, and he is giving us an out. And I think the one thing that we can at least appreciate with the situation is, even though this seems to be an absolute whiff on a hire, for him to actually recognize that he's not cut out for this and stepping down and saving the team money, even though I don't really care that much about Dan's money, that is a positive. But it does seem like no matter who's in the front office, no matter who's on the team, there is always some sort of level of dysfunction with the Cavs that you can bet on.
Well, you know, it kind of goes back to, I remember when they fired Lou at the beginning of last season, and I said, okay, this is a lost year in identity development for the Cavs. Do you remember? I don't know if you remember that take, but it was more like there's no, the next, you know, 78 games were not going to inform how the Cavs played 5 years from now. And I think start the counter back at zero.
Hell yeah.
With this. And, you know, I think it had to happen. It's like one of those things where, I think the reason the dissidence we have right now is that on one hand, we know that it's better for the Cavs if everyone moves on from this experiment.
Right.
But on the other hand, we know just what a toxic indicator this is and what an acknowledgement of this failure means for how wasteful the last year and a half have been of Cavs basketball.
No, I think that's fair. And I mean, if you wanted to have a absolute lock of a bet, it would be that the Cavs would remain dysfunctional. Unfortunately, I don't think there's any way that you can really go out there and put money on such a thing. But with our sponsor, betonline.ag, there are plenty of other things that you can bet on in the world of sports, because BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all things sports. March Madness, the Masters, and Major League Opening Day are right around the corner. BetOnline has you covered for all your latest news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. The best part is, when you sign up, you receive a 50% welcome bonus. The Wilder Fury rematch goes down on this Saturday night. We can't think of a better way to wager on that fight than doing it with actual free money. Head over to betonline.ag and use our promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. We signed up, it's super easy, and if you're already betting, it's a fantastic way to support this podcast. Again, that's promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, when you sign up at betonline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Well done, Justin.
Thank you, Carter. Thank you. I don't think we're going to go as deep into discussing the mechanics of ad reads as you and Jeff did, but I did appreciate that that very, very lovely segment that you guys did.
All I'm saying is that if you want to make fun of us for it, that's fine. But when we bullshit about the ad read, I think we get more feedback on that than the actual content of the pod. True or false?
I think that that's a fairly accurate statement.
Yeah, so I think we're catching lightning in a bottle here. People like seeing the curtain peeled back.
Yeah, I think people like our on-air show meetings, and you and Jeff did a great job of that. We do have to get to our Bet Online lock of the week, right?
It's a safe bet of the week. Please,
safe bet of the week.
Please read your Chase Down brand guide. It's in a PDF format at your... Thank you.
Oh, you're back now?
Did I leave?
Yes, you cut out.
Oh, well, shit.
Right after the word PDF.
Oh, well, let me give you the gist. Don't even cut it. Don't even cut it. The gist was it's on PDF, so if you can read that as at your earliest convenience, that would be much appreciated. So we can better
serve. I'm a little rusty. I've had a big week and a bit of douching it up down in Mexico.
Listen, through some intense... market testing, we found that the safe bet of the week, a Chase Down staple, is the proper branding. And this is the kind of shit that's gonna lose us money, bro.
Okay, well, what is your safe bet of the week, Carter?
My safe bet of the week is that the Cavs are going to beat the Washington Wizards on Friday by at least 10 points. Dead coach bounce, baby. Maybe that's inappropriate given the age. Haha.
Woof. Woof. I do like the joke, though. Mine is actually kind of building off of yours. You look at the next few games. We got Washington, Miami twice, Philadelphia, Pelicans, Indiana, Utah, Boston, Denver. I'm saying we win at least two of those games.
Okay.
I believe in Kevin Love being a little bit less grumpy, the pairing with Andre Drummond, Darius Garland getting some time off. Oh my God, did that kid need some time off? But yeah, I have good feelings. I got good juju about this time, and the dead coach bounce certainly helps with that.
I couldn't agree more. Here's a question that just popped into my head. Again, assuming Bickerstaff is the coach the rest of the year.
Yes.
Does Darius Garland get benched?
No. No, I think
0% chance.
I think 0% chance, and this is something that I was thinking about a little bit on break. So the whole and Nam brought this up, and it actually was one of the few things that annoyed me in the podcast I listened to. The whole thing of, okay, Kevin Porter Jr. is so good, we have to find ways to get him minutes and get him opportunities. If you're looking at basically, since he's come back from injury, he's getting 28 minutes per night. Garland's getting about 32. Sexton has his minutes have been higher than both of them. I think just under 35 minutes per game. And I mean, that's justified at this point. Colin Sexton is playing the best of those three guards. I don't think he can really mess with it. Like, all of those guys are getting opportunities, but Garland is one of the only guys that can actually get the Cavs into sets and run plays as somewhat of a point guard. Yes, he's not making all of his shots or not even making a great clip of those shots, but he's making the right decisions and taking the right shots. If you take Sexton out of the starting lineup, you do not have enough scoring. You absolutely need his scoring. If you put Kevin Porter Jr. in instead of Garland, I think you lose the threat of some shooting. You lose the playmaking. I don't see the need to mess with it at this point. I think it's an unnecessary ego blow for Darius Garland, who, even though his shooting numbers have fallen off since he's kind of hit this rookie wall, the assists are still up there, and overall he's doing a pretty decent job of playing that point guard position.
Yeah, he's doing fine, I guess, getting them into their sets. The reason I ask isn't really that related to what I think. It's more what I think Bickerstaff might do. which is maybe go a little more pro vet
down right, the stretch. Right, but the alternative is Kevin Porter Jr., right? Like, there's no way
he's... No, you could play Exum. You could play, I guess they lost Knight. Dally some more minutes. I'm just saying, it's possible that he doesn't... I mean, all I'm saying is this, that the Cavs have been perfectly content to continue to play players who are not playing well, heavy minutes.
But a big part of that is
I wonder if he feels different. That's the general question. Is he going to stick with players, the young guys, if they're playing like shit on a game-to-game basis?
I think
it's more game-to-game, I think, actually, now that you're – I think you've challenged me to think of it in that way, and I do think it's going to be more of a game-to-game question than a hard rotation question.
And I think that that's actually healthy. I think that making sure that those guys are earning their minutes to some extent is important. Overall, though, I do think that it's a little bit overblown. I mean, that criticism basically exists for him not playing Jaren Jackson Jr. at times down the stretch of close games, which the Grizzlies didn't have tons of. He still got that team to 33 wins, even with turmoil. I just don't think that there's veteran options really available. Some accountability is going to be good. I think those are the type of decisions that actually do end up coming down from the general manager to some extent, where it's, hey, this is the direction of the team. And benching a guy for Dante Exum is a little bit different than playing, let's say, Marc Gasol or Mike Conley over other veterans. Like, the Cavs just don't have that type of depth or proven commodities, really, outside of their bigs that are obviously going to be playing, to really have an alternative to their guards.
Yeah, that's fair. Sorry, I had a burp. I don't know if that got on the mic, but it came out. So, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be really interesting moving forward. I do think the team's going to be more interested and engaged. You know, let's just say, you know, again, I think it's always important to note that we don't know anything. And we're not sources. We're not reporters. But at this point, we are at the point where we're here. You hear some stuff.
Yeah.
I have heard that the team never really moved past the thug incident, and in fact still bring it up in their own ways, and that
fairly regularly.
Yep, and that he's just lost. They lost him. You hear from other people that you know, they go. I mean, in the piece that the Athletic had questioning Beilein earlier in the year, that when players have questions, they always ask JB.
And that was a big thing we talked about at the time, was regardless how any of us feel about that situation, it is, especially when it comes to the head coach, maintaining buy-in and having those players believe in whatever you're doing, even if it isn't the best process or not the best way to maximize them, you have to have the buy-in from players. And if you lose that locker room and if you lose those players, and that situation continued to be a big deal, I think maybe that's one of those situations where that's what Beilein looked at and said, okay, I don't see any way of turning this around, where even the young guys are struggling to buy in and not connecting with me. I need to kind of pull the ripcord here and get out of here.
Yeah. I don't know if he had a way back. I think he burned whatever goodwill he had left with the thugs thing. And, you know, I do think it's one of those things where I actually was of the opinion that I pretty much believed that he meant to say slugs, just because it fit in context with what he said.
Right.
But, you know, Freudian slips are Freudian slips. And it didn't sit well with the guys that were already looking for a reason to move on.
The biggest thing. He, from day one, was struggling with doing the job. And for guys that have doubted him and doubted him before that. And you even had the piece in The Athletic where those guys were questioning him. To go from that to that Slugs incident, that probably was the nail in the coffin. And if you accept the fact that this likely was falling apart no matter what, as a result of that situation, and it was just a matter of when, okay, it's going to look bad. We should be.
No, it is bad. It is worse. And I want to say, this isn't just an optics thing. This is worse than if he had gave it his all. And at the end of year two, when I'm like, ugh, I can't do it.
No, I agree with that. But I think it's better. I don't know if it's better. I think it's slightly better than him getting efficient. Fired at the end of the year.
Yeah, it's more efficient to just move on and they have more time to search.
If we actually fired him in year one of year five, I think that would be just another incident of, oh my God, this Cavs franchise. It is still not good. It is very, very, very bad. And we should be the subject of a lot of jokes.
The fact that this guy is having such a fucking terrible time that he's going to walk away from 4 years of salary or whatever he agrees to in his buyout. Come on. This is unprecedented toxicity.
It's bad, but it is a step above him getting fired, I think.
At least
when it comes to your ability to potentially hire another coach. But at the end of the day, there's only 30 of these jobs, and people will go just about anywhere to do the job.
Yeah, I wonder how much of this is just lingering negativity and toxicity around the franchise goes away when Love's gone.
I mean, that might
and
be part
Thompson
of it.
Too.
The situation...
Love certainly made it an uphill battle.
He made it a lot worse, and I think that this is a situation where he was, it seems like every indication is he was not cut out for this job, and the player smelt blood in the water and made it a whole lot worse and made the decision easier. Then you had the situation with his son as well. We don't know the details there. I really hope that when this is over, it's just left at that, and that information doesn't get dragged out, and the Cavs don't start leaking stuff to make it to deflect some of the attention away from their own role in the situation. Even though it is on Bayline choosing to quit, I really don't want to see us go that route. I'd rather just wash our hands of this. And you can tell, there is nothing going on. There's no games until Thursday. It's still not really being discussed outside of Cavs fans. People don't care. We are working from rock bottom anyways. So at the end of the day, that's why I feel like it doesn't affect our trajectory a ton. But I do think that it's important for us to really come to terms with, hey, really weird shit is going to happen here, and changing the culture of this franchise is beyond an uphill battle.
Yeah. It's just, you use the phrase not really cut out for the job. And in how many ways does that describe this Cavs structure right now? Kevin Love wasn't really cut out for the job of leading a lottery team.
No.
John Beilein was not cut out to coach in the NBA at his advanced age. And
Darius Garland wasn't ready to play 32 minutes a night as a rookie.
Yeah, Darius Garland wasn't really cut out to do this yet. It's just so many things that, we know Beilein's a good coach. Come on. We know he's not some moron. He's one of the most successful college coaches ever. And as far as we can tell, didn't have to cheat a lot to do it. So clearly he's a good coach and understands the game very well.
No, David Blatt was a good coach.
Yep, 100%. So we know that Kevin Love is an all-star, helpful player, championship player. One of the more unique and game-changing power forwards of the era. Not cut out to do this. And I just don't know. I don't know what the Cavs' next step is in building a culture that doesn't suck. Because even last year, it seemed like the guys mostly liked each other. This year seems much less happy. Maybe it's just the Channing Frye's gone effect.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, the stretch last season that made people like myself that have the memory of a goldfish and are looking basically for any reason to have fun and be optimistic. That all happened after the All-Star break. Like, Colin Sexton wasn't good until after the All-Star break, and that changed how we felt about his entire season. So I think it is important to note that these things do change in a hurry. And it's going to shape our perspective on us. And that's one of the reasons why I think it's for the best that this just gets wrapped up right away. Let's wash our hands of the situation, because him actually coaching the rest of the year is going to keep this entire situation on our minds the rest of the season. And it's going to poison the well even more than it's already been poisoned.
Yep. It needs to happen. It's over. As you said, pull the ripcord, get out, go coach, a high mid major. I had this idea of this hypothetical, like, kind of wash over my mind of his first practice at, you know, San Jose State or whatever. And he is getting ready to should teach the guys the first day of teaching the offense. And he's like, so we do kind of a fun thing here. We name all our sets after zoo animals. And one of the players laughs and goes, ha, that's a fun idea, coach. And then a single solitary tear rolls down his eye.
That is
I'm home, baby.
That is a beautiful, beautiful mental image that you have painted for me. I will think of that image as I sleep and try to recover from this trip. I don't know how coherent I was today. I think it probably slipped in and out. I had fiery takes to go with the fiery poops that come from over.
Yeah, what was the highlight? What was the highlight?
Food. Definitely food. Man, Puerto Vallarta is awesome. Like,
everyone says.
I went to Mexico last year on the other side, the Cancun side, and leaving it, I remember vividly heading to the airport saying, I don't need to do this again. I don't need to go to Mexico again, even though we were on an all-inclusive last time for the majority of it and did a few day trips and whatnot. This one we weren't. It was just a condo that was being rented kind of thing. But yeah, I enjoyed it way, way, way more. And if people are going to Mexico, that would be my recommendation. Food is so good, and it's cheap too. I was really blown away.
Well, I'm Big Jelly. Hope you had a great time, bud.
I did, buddy. Thank you for holding down the fort. Thank you for all the listeners that have put up with me sleepily getting through the latest of this Cavs news. I'm sure we're going to have a lot more to talk about with this stuff, how the Cavs handle it. I think at this point we can assume JB Bickerstaff is going to be the head coach, but who knows? There is always the possibility of weird with this team.
We'll emergency pot if for some reason he stays.
My God. Yeah, that seems very that would probably be the right way to go about it. But big thanks again to Carter. Thanks to all of our listeners. Remember, if you want to support the podcast, the best way you can do so is by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to support us directly, you can do so by Googling Chase Down Premium. Just 99 cents for your first month, $5 a month after that. You get access to our bonus feeds, youth reports and all that good stuff, maybe some emergency pods thrown in there, or whatever the hell you want. You can also support us by supporting our sponsor, betonline.ag. Remember, promo code BLUEWIRE to get your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it, though. So thanks again to Carter. Thanks to all of our listeners. Until next time, go Cavs.